gigantic flat stage of white marble. The classroom was high up in the castle, on the fifth floor, and Harry knew that was as much explanation as he'd get for where a room like this was supposed to fit. It was becoming clear that Hogwarts simply did not have a geometry, Euclidean or otherwise. It had connections, not directions. Unlike a university hall, there weren't rows of folding seats. Instead, there were quite ordinary Hogwarts wooden desks and wooden chairs, lined up in a curve across each level of the classroom. Except that each desk had a flat, white, rectangular, mysterious object propped up on it. In the center of the gigantic platform, on a small raised dais of darker marble, was a lone teacher's desk, at which Quirrell sat slumped over his chair, head lolled back, drooling slightly over his robes.
"Now, what does that remind me of?"
Harry had arrived at the lesson so early that no other students were there yet. The English language was defective when it came to describing time travel. In particular, English lacked any words capable of expressing how convenient it was. Quirrell didn't seem to be functional at the moment, and Harry didn't particularly feel like approaching Quirrell anyway. Harry selected a desk, climbed up to it, sat down, and retrieved the defense textbook. He was around 7/8 of the way through. He'd planned on finishing the book before this lesson, actually, but he was running behind schedule and had already used the time-turner twice today. Soon there were sounds as the classroom began to fill up. Harry ignored them.
"Potter, what are you doing here?"
That voice didn't belong here. Harry looked up.
"Draco? What are you doing? Oh, my goodness, you have minions!"
One of the lads standing behind Draco seemed to have rather a lot of muscle for an 11-year-old, and the other was poised in a suspiciously balanced-looking stance. The white, blonde-haired boy smiled rather smugly and gestured behind him.
"Potter, I introduce to you Mr. Crabbe."
His hand moved from muscles to balance.
"Mr. Goyle. Vincent, Gregory. This is Harry Potter."
Mr. Goyle tilted his head and gave Harry a look that was probably supposed to mean something, but ended up just looking squinty. Mr. Crabbe said,
"Pleased to meet you,"
in a tone that sounded like he was trying to lower his voice as far as it could go. A fleeting expression of consternation crossed Draco's face, but was quickly replaced by his superior grin.
"You have minions," Harry repeated. "Where do I get minions?"
Draco's smirk grew wider.
"I'm afraid, Potter, that the first step is to be sorted into Slytherin."
"What? That's not fair."
"And then for your families to have an arrangement before you were born."
Harry looked at Mr. Crabbe and Mr. Goyle. They both seemed to be trying very hard to loom. That is, they were leaning forwards, hunching over their shoulders, sticking their necks out and staring at him.
"Hold on," said Harry. "This was arranged years ago."
"Exactly, Potter. I'm afraid you're out of luck."
Mr. Goyle produced a toothpick and began cleaning his teeth, still looming.
"And," said Harry, "Lucius insisted that you were not to grow up knowing your bodyguards, and that you were only to meet them on your first day of school."
That wiped the grin from Draco's face.
"Yes, Potter, We all know you're brilliant. The whole school knows by now. You can stop showing off. So, they've been told their whole lives that they're going to be your minions, and they've spent years imagining what minions are supposed to be like.
Draco winced.
And what's worse, they do know each other, and they've been practicing.
The boss told you to shut it,
rumbled Mr. Crab. Mr. Goyle bit down on his toothpick, holding it between his teeth, and used one hand to crack the knuckles on the other.
I told you not to do this in front of Harry Potter!
The two looked a bit sheepish, and Mr. Goyle quickly put the toothpick back in a pocket of his robes. But the moment Draco turned away from them to face Harry again, they went back to looming.
I apologize, Draco said stiffly, for the insult which these imbeciles have offered you.
Harry gave a meaningful look to Mr. Crab and Mr. Goyle.
I'd say you're being a little harsh on them, Draco. I think they're acting exactly the way I'd want my minions to act. I mean, if I had any minions.
Draco's jaw dropped.
Hey, Gregory, you don't think he's trying to lure us away from the boss, do you?
I'm sure Mr. Potter wouldn't be that foolish. Oh, I wouldn't dream of it,
Harry said smoothly.
It's just something to keep in mind if your current employer seems unappreciative. Besides, it never hurts to have other offers while you're negotiating your working conditions, right?
What's he doing in Ravenclaw?
Oh, I can't imagine, Mr. Crab. Both of you shut up,
Draco said through gritted teeth.
That's an order!
With a visible effort, he transferred his attention to Harry again.
Anyway, what are you doing in the Slytherin defense class?
Harry frowned.
Hold on!
His hand went into his pouch.
Timetable!
He looked over the parchment.
Defense, 2:30 p.m., and right now it's...
Harry looked at his mechanical watch, which read 11:23.
2:23, unless I've lost track of time. Did I?
If he had, well, Harry knew how to get to whatever lesson he was supposed to be at. Oh, he loved his time-turner, and someday, when he was old enough, they would get married.
No, that sounds right,
Draco said, looking puzzled. His gaze turned to look over the rest of the auditorium, which was filling with green-trimmed robes and...
Gryffindorks!
Spat Draco.
What are they doing here?
Harry said.
Professor Quirrell did say, I forget his exact words, that he would be ignoring some of the Hogwarts teaching conventions. Maybe he just combined all his classes.
Huh, said Draco. You're the first Ravenclaw in here.
Yep, got here early.
What are you doing all the way in the back row, then?
Harry blinked.
I don't know. It seems like a good place to sit.
Draco made a scoffing sound.
You couldn't get any further away from the teacher if you tried.
The blonde-haired boy leaned slightly closer.
Anyway, is it true about what you said to Derek and his crew? Who's Derek? You hit him with a pie? Two pies, actually. What am I supposed to have said to him? That he wasn't doing anything cunning or ambitious, and he was a disgrace to Salazar Slytherin.
Draco was staring intently at Harry.
"That sounds about right," Harry said. "I think it was more like, is this some kind of incredibly clever plot that will gain you a future advantage, or is it really as much of a disgrace to the memory of Salazar Slytherin as it looks like? Or something like that. I don't remember the exact words." "You're confusing everyone, you know," said the blonde-haired boy.
"Huh?"
Harry said in honest confusion.
"Warrington said that spending a long time under the Sorting Hat is one of the warning signs of a major dark wizard. Everyone was talking about it, wondering if they should start sucking up to you just in case. Then you went and protected a bunch of Hufflepuffs for Merlin's sake. Then you told Derek he's a disgrace to Salazar Slytherin's memory. What's anyone supposed to think?"
"That the Sorting Hat decided to put me in the House of Slytherin. Just kidding, Ravenclaw. And I've been acting accordingly."
Mr. Crabbe and Mr. Goyle both giggled, causing Mr. Goyle to quickly clap a hand to his mouth.
"We'd better get to our seats," Draco said.
He hesitated, straightened a bit, spoke a bit more formally.
"But I do want to continue our last conversation, and I accept your conditions."
Harry nodded.
"Would you mind terribly if I waited until Saturday afternoon? I'm in a bit of a contest right now."
"A contest?"
"See if I can read all my textbooks as fast as Hermione Granger did."
"Granger?"
Draco echoed, his eyes narrowed.
"The mudblood who thinks she's Merlin? If you're trying to show her up, then all Slytherin wishes you the very best luck, Potter, and I won't bother you till Saturday."
Draco inclined his head respectfully and wandered off, tailed by his minions.
"Oh, this is going to be so much fun to juggle. I can already tell."
The classroom was filling up rapidly now with all four colours of trim: green, red, yellow, and blue. Draco and his two friends seemed to be in the midst of trying to acquire three contiguous front row seats, already occupied, of course. Mr. Crabbe and Mr. Goyle were looming vigorously, but it didn't seem to be having much effect. Harry bent over his defense textbook and continued reading. At 2:35 p.m., when most of the seats were taken and no one else seemed to be coming in, Professor Quirrell gave a sudden jerk in his chair and sat up straight, and his face appeared on all the flat, white, rectangular objects that were propped up on the students' desks. Harry was taken by surprise, both by the sudden appearance of Professor Quirrell's face and by the resemblance to Muggle television. There was something both nostalgic and sad about that. It seemed so much like a piece of home, and yet it wasn't, really.
"Good afternoon, my young apprentices," said Professor Quirrell.
His voice seemed to come from the desk screen and to be speaking directly to Harry.
"Welcome to your first lesson in battle magic, as the founders of Hogwarts would have put it, or, as it happens to be called in the late 20th century, defense against the dark arts."
There was a certain amount of frantic scrabbling as students, taken by surprise, reached for their parchment or notebooks.
"No," Quirrell said. "Don't bother writing down what this subject was once called. No such pointless questions will count toward your marks in any of my lessons. That is a promise."
Many students sat straight up at that, looking rather shocked. Professor Quirrell was smiling thinly.
"Those of you who have wasted time by reading your useless first-year defense textbooks..."
Someone made a choking sound. Harry wondered if it was Hermione.
"May have gotten the impression that although this subject is called Defense Against the Dark Arts, it is actually about how to defend against nightmare butterflies, which cause mildly bad dreams, or acid slugs, which can dissolve all the way through a 2-inch wooden beam given most of a day."
Professor Quirrell stood up, shoving his chair back from the desk. The screen on Harry's desk followed his every move. Professor Quirrell strode toward the front of the classroom and bellowed,
"The Hungarian horntail is taller than a dozen men. It breathes fire so quickly and so accurately that it can melt a snitch in mid-flight. One killing curse will bring it down."
There were gasps from the students.
"The mountain troll is more dangerous than the Hungarian horntail. It is strong enough to bite through steel. Its hide is resistant enough to withstand stunning hexes and cutting charms. Its sense of smell is so acute that it can tell from afar whether its prey is part of a pack or alone and vulnerable. Most fearsome of all, the troll is unique among magical creatures in continuously maintaining a form of transfiguration on itself. It is always transforming into its own body. If you somehow succeed in ripping off its arm, it will grow another within seconds. Fire and acid will produce scar tissue which can temporarily confuse a troll's regenerative powers for an hour or two. They are smart enough to use clubs as tools. The mountain troll is the third most perfect killing machine in all nature. One killing curse will bring it down."
The students were looking rather shocked. Professor Quirrell was smiling rather grimly.
"Your sad excuse for a third-year defense textbook will suggest to you that you expose the mountain troll to sunlight, which will freeze it in place. This, my young apprentices, is the sort of useless knowledge you will never find in my lessons. You do not encounter mountain trolls in open daylight. The idea that you should use sunlight to stop them is the result of foolish textbook authors trying to show off their mastery of minutiae at the expense of practicality. Just because there is a ridiculously obscure way of dealing with mountain trolls does not mean you should actually try to use it. The killing curse is unblockable, unstoppable, and works every single time on anything with a brain. If, as an adult wizard, you find yourself incapable of using the killing curse, then you can simply apparate away. Likewise, if you are facing the second most perfect killing machine, a Dementor, you just apparate away. Unless, of course," Professor Quirrell said, his voice now lower and harder, "you are under the influence of an anti-apparition jinx. No, there is exactly one monster which can threaten you once you are fully grown. The single most dangerous monster in all the world. So dangerous that nothing else comes close. The Dark Wizard. That is the only thing that will still be able to threaten you."
Professor Quirrell's lips were set in a thin line.
"I will reluctantly teach you enough trivia for a passing mark on the ministry-mandated portions of your first-year finals. Since your exact mark on these sections will make no difference to your future life, anyone who wants more than a passing mark is welcome to waste their own time studying our pathetic excuse for a textbook. The title of this subject is not Defense Against Minor Pests. You are here to learn how to defend yourselves against the dark arts, which means, let us be very clear on this, defending yourselves against dark wizards. People with wands who want to hurt you, and who will likely succeed in doing so unless you hurt them first. There is no defense without offense. There is no defense without fighting. This reality is deemed too harsh for 11-year-olds by the fat, overpaid, aura-guarded politicians who mandate your curriculum. To the abyss with those fools! You are here for the subject that has been taught at Hogwarts for 800 years. Welcome to your first year of battle magic!
Harry started applauding. He couldn't help himself. It was too inspiring. Once Harry started clapping, there was some scattered response from Gryffindor, and more from Slytherin, but most students simply seemed too stunned to react. Professor Quirrell made a cutting gesture, and the applause died instantly.
"Thank you very much," said Professor Quirrell. "Now to practicalities. I have combined all my first-year battle classes into one, which allows me to offer you twice as much classroom time as double sessions."
There were gasps of horror.
"An increased load, which I will make up to you by not assigning any homework."
The gasps of horror cut off abruptly.
"Yes, you heard me correctly. I will teach you to fight, not to write 12 inches on fighting due Monday."
Harry desperately wished he'd sat next to Hermione so he could see the look on her face now, but on the other hand, he was pretty sure he was imagining it accurately. Also, Harry was in love. It would be a 3-way wedding. Him, the time-turner, and Professor Quirrell.
"For those of you who so choose, I have arranged some after-school activities that I think you will find quite interesting, as well as educational. Do you want to show the world your own abilities instead of watching 14 other people play Quidditch? More than 7 people can fight in an army. Hot damn. These and other after-school activities will also earn you Quirrell points. What are Quirrell points, you ask? The house point system does not suit my needs, because it makes house points too rare. I prefer to let my students know how they are doing more frequently than that, and on the rare occasions I offer you a written test, it will mark itself as you go along, and if you get too many related questions wrong, your test will show the names of students who got those questions right, and those students will be able to earn Quirrell points by helping you."
Wow. Why didn't the other professors use a system like that?
"What good are Quirrell points, you wonder? For a start, 10 Quirrell points will be worth 1 house point, but they will earn you other favors as well. Would you like to take your exam at an unusual time? Is there a particular session you would very much prefer to skip? you will find that I can be very flexible on behalf of students who have accumulated enough Quirrell points. Quirrell points will control the generalship of the armies. And for Christmas, just before the Christmas break, I will grant someone a wish. Any school-related feat that lies within my power, my influence, or above all, my ingenuity. Yes, I was in Slytherin, and I am offering to formulate a cunning plot on your behalf, if that is what it takes to accomplish your desire. This wish will go to whoever has earned the most Quirrell points within all 7 years.
That would be Harry.
Now, leave your books and loose items at your desks. They will be safe, the screens will watch over them for you, and come down onto this platform. It's time to play a game called Who's the Most Dangerous Student in the Classroom?
Harry twisted his wand in his right hand and said,
Ma-ha-su!
There was another high-pitched bing from the floating blue sphere that Professor Quirrell had assigned to Harry as his target. That particular sound meant a perfect strike, which Harry had gotten on 9 out of his last 10 attempts. Somewhere, Professor Quirrell had dug up a spell that was incredibly easy to pronounce, and had a ridiculously simple wand motion, and had a tendency to hit wherever you were currently looking at. Professor Quirrell had disdainfully proclaimed that real battle magic was far more difficult than this, that the hex was entirely useless in actual combat, that it was a barely ordered burst of magic whose only real content was the aiming, and that it would produce, when it hit, a pain briefly equivalent to being punched hard in the nose. That the sole purpose of this test was to see who was a fast learner, since Professor Quirrell was certain no one would have previously encountered this hex, or anything like it. Harry didn't care about any of that.
Ma-ha-su!
A red bolt of energy shot out of his wand and struck the target, and the blue sphere once again made the bing, which meant the spell had actually worked for him. Harry was feeling like a real wizard for the first time since he'd come to Hogwarts. He wished the target would dodge like the little spheres that Ben Kenobi had used for training Luke, but for some reason Professor Quirrell had insisted lining up all the students and targets in neat orders, which made sure they wouldn't fire on each other. So Harry lowered his wand, skipped to the right, snapped up his wand and twisted and shouted, Ma-ha-su! There was a lower pitch, dong, which meant he'd gotten it almost right. Harry put his wand into his pocket, skipped back to the left and drew and fired another red bolt of energy. The high-pitched bing, which resulted, was easily one of the most satisfying sounds he had heard in his life. Harry wanted to scream in triumph at the top of his lungs,
I can do magic! Fear me, laws of physics! I'm coming to violate you! Ma-ha-su!
Harry's voice was loud, but hardly noticeable over the steady chant of similar cries from around the classroom.
Enough!
Said Professor Quirrell's amplified voice. It didn't sound loud. It sounded like normal volume, coming from just behind your left shoulder, no matter where you were standing relative to Professor Quirrell.
I see that all of you have succeeded at least once now.
The target spheres turned red and began to drift up towards the ceiling. Professor Quirrell was standing on the raised dais in the center of the platform, leaning slightly on his teacher's desk with one hand.
I told you,
Professor Quirrell said, "that we would play a game called Who's the Most Dangerous Student in the Classroom? There is one student in this classroom who mastered the Sumerian simple strike hex faster than anyone else."
Oh, blah, blah, blah.
"And went on to help 7 other students, for which she has earned the first 7 Quirrell points awarded to your year. Come forth, Hermione Granger. It is time for the next stage of the game."
Hermione Granger began striding forwards, a mixed look of triumph and apprehension on her face. The Ravenclaws looked on proudly, the Slytherins with glares, and Harry with frank annoyance. Harry had done fine this time. He was probably even in the upper half of the class, now that everyone had been faced with an equally unfamiliar spell, and Harry had read all the way through Adalbert Waffling's magical theory. And yet, Hermione was still doing better. Somewhere in the back of his mind was the fear that Hermione was simply smarter than him. But, for now, Harry was going to pin his hopes on the known fact that, A, Hermione had read a lot more than the standard textbooks, and B, Adalbert Waffling was an uninspired sod who'd written magical theory to pander to a school board that didn't think much of 11-year-olds. Hermione reached the central dais and stepped up.
"Hermione Granger mastered a completely unfamiliar spell in 2 minutes, almost a full minute faster than the next runner-up."
Professor Quirrell turned slowly in place to look at all the students watching them.
"Could Miss Granger's intelligence make her the most dangerous student in the classroom? Well, what do you think?"
No one seemed to be thinking anything at the moment. Even Harry wasn't sure what to say.
"Let's find out, shall we?" said Professor Quirrell.
He turned back to Hermione and gestured toward the wider class.
"Select any student you like and cast the simple strike hex on them."
Hermione froze where she stood.
"Come now," Professor Quirrell said smoothly. "You have cast this spell perfectly over 50 times. It is not permanently harmful, or even all that painful. It hurts as much as a hard punch and lasts only a few seconds."
Professor Quirrell's voice grew harder.
"This is a direct order from your professor, Miss Granger. Choose a target and fire a simple strike hex."
Hermione's face was screwed up in horror, and her wand was trembling in her hand. Harry's own fingers were clenching his own wand hard in sympathy, even though he could see what Professor Quirrell was trying to do. Even though he could see the point Professor Quirrell was trying to make.
"If you do not raise your wand and fire, Miss Granger, you will lose a Quirrell point."
Harry stared at Hermione, willing her to look in his direction. His right hand was softly tapping his own chest.
"Pick me! I'm not afraid!"
Hermione's wand twitched in her hand. Then her face relaxed, and she lowered her wand to her side.
"No,"
said Hermione Granger. Her voice was calm, and even though it wasn't loud, everyone heard it in the silence.
"Then I must deduct 1 point from you," said Professor Quirrell. "This is a test, and you have failed it."
That reached her. Harry could see it, but she kept her shoulders straight. Professor Quirrell's voice was sympathetic and seemed to fill the whole room.
"Knowing things isn't always enough, Miss Granger. If you cannot give and receive violence on the order of stubbing your toe, then you cannot defend yourself, and you will not pass defense. Please rejoin your classmates."
Hermione walked back towards the Ravenclaw cluster. Her face looked peaceful, and Harry, for some odd reason, wanted to start clapping, even though Professor Quirrell had been right.
"So," Professor Quirrell said, "it becomes clear that Hermione Granger is not the most dangerous student in the classroom. Who do you think might actually be the most dangerous person here? Besides me, of course."
Without even thinking, Harry turned to look at the Slytherin contingent.
"Draco of the noble and most ancient house of Malfoy," said Professor Quirrell. "It seems that many of your fellow pupils are looking in your direction. Come forth, if you would."
Draco did so, walking with a certain pride in his bearing. He stepped onto the dais and looked up at Professor Quirrell with a smile.
"Mr. Malfoy," Professor Quirrell said, "fire."
Harry would have tried to stop it if there'd been time, but in one smooth motion, Draco spun on the Ravenclaw contingent and raised his wand and said, "Masu!" like it was all one syllable, and Hermione was saying,
"Ow!"
And that was that.
"Well struck," said Professor Quirrell. "Two Quirrell points to you. But tell me, why did you target Miss Granger?"
There was a pause. Finally, Draco said,
"Because she stood out the most."
Professor Quirrell's lips turned up in a thin smile.
"And that is the true reason why Draco Malfoy is dangerous. Had he selected any other, that child would more likely resent being singled out, and Mr. Malfoy would more probably make an enemy. And while Mr. Malfoy might have given some other justification for selecting her, that would have served him no purpose save to alienate some of you. Well, others are already cheering him whether he says anything or not. Which is to say that Mr. Malfoy is dangerous because he knows who to strike and who not to strike, how to make allies and avoid making enemies. Two more Quirrell points to you, Mr. Malfoy. And, as you have demonstrated an exemplary virtue of Slytherin, I think that Salazar's house has earned a point as well. You may rejoin your friends."
Draco bowed slightly and walked back to the Slytherin contingent. Some clapping started from the green-trimmed robes, but Professor Quirrell made a cutting gesture, and silence fell again.
"It might seem that our game is done," said Professor Quirrell. "And yet, there is a single student in this classroom who is more dangerous than the scion of Malfoy."
And now, for some reason, there seemed to be an awful lot of people looking at
"Harry Potter, come forth."
This did not bode well. Harry reluctantly walked towards where Professor Quirrell stood on his raised dais, still leaning slightly against his teacher's desk. The nervousness of being put into the spotlight seemed to be sharpening Harry's wits as he approached the dais, and his mind was ruffling through possibilities of what Professor Quirrell might think could demonstrate Harry's dangerousness. Would he be asked to cast a spell? To defeat a Dark Lord? Demonstrate his supposed immunity to the killing curse? Surely Professor Quirrell was too smart for that? Harry stopped well short of the dais, and Professor Quirrell didn't ask him to come any closer.
"The irony is," said Professor Quirrell, "you all looked at the right person for entirely the wrong reasons. You are thinking," Professor Quirrell's lips twisted, "that Harry Potter has defeated the Dark Lord and so must be very dangerous. Bah! He was 1 year old. Whatever quirk of fate killed the Dark Lord likely had little to do with Mr. Potter's abilities as a fighter. But after I heard rumours of one Ravenclaw facing down 5 older Slytherins, I interviewed several eyewitnesses, and came to the conclusion that Harry Potter would be my most dangerous student."
A jolt of adrenaline poured into Harry's system, making him stand up straighter. He didn't know what conclusion Professor Quirrell had come to, but that couldn't be good.
Professor Quirrell, Harry started to say.
Professor Quirrell looked amused.
"You're thinking that I've come up with a wrong answer, aren't you, Mr. Potter? You will learn to expect better of me."
Professor Quirrell straightened from where he had leaned on the desk.
"Mr. Potter, all things have their accustomed uses. Give me 10 unaccustomed uses of objects in this room for combat."
For a moment, Harry was rendered speechless by the sheer, raw shock of having been understood. And then, the ideas started to pour out.
"There are desks which are heavy enough to be fatal if dropped from a great height. There are chairs with metal legs that could impale someone if driven hard enough. The air in this classroom would be deadly by its absence, since people die in a vacuum, and it can serve as a carrier for poison gases."
Harry had to stop briefly for breath, and into that pause Professor Quirrell said,
"That's 3. You need 10. The rest of the class thinks that you've already used up the whole contents of the classroom."
"Ha! The floor can be removed to create a spike pit to fall into. The ceiling can be collapsed on someone. The walls can serve as raw material for transfiguration into any number of deadly things. Knives, say."
"That's 6. But surely you're scraping the bottom of the barrel now."
"I haven't even started. Just look at all the people. Having a Gryffindor attack the enemy is an ordinary use, of course."
"I will not count that one."
"But their blood can also be used to drown someone. Ravenclaws are known for their brains, but their internal organs could be sold on the black market for enough money to hire an assassin. Slytherins aren't just useful assassins, they can also be thrown at sufficient velocity to crush an enemy, and Hufflepuffs, in addition to being hard workers, also contain bones that can be removed, sharpened, and used to stab someone."
By now, the rest of the class was staring at Harry in some horror. Even the Slytherins looked shocked.
"That's 10, though I'm being generous in counting the Ravenclaw one. Now, for extra credit, 1 Quirrell point for each use of object in this room which you have not yet named."
Professor Quirrell favoured Harry with a companionable smile.
"The rest of your class thinks you are in trouble now, since you've named everything except the targets, and you have no idea what may be done with those."
"Bah! I've named all the people, but not my robes, which can be used to suffocate an enemy if wrapped around their head enough times, or Hermione Granger's robes, which can be torn into strips and tied into a rope and used to hang someone, or Draco Malfoy's robes, which can be used to start a fire.
3 points, said Professor Quirrell. No more clothing now.
My wand can be pushed into an enemy's brain through their eye socket,
and someone made a horrified strangling sound.
4 points. No more wands.
My wristwatch could suffocate someone if jammed down their throat.
5 points, and enough.
Harry said.
10 Quirrell points to 1 house point, right? You should have let me keep going until I'd won the house cup. I haven't even started yet on the unaccustomed uses of everything I've got in my pockets.
Or the moleskin pouch itself, and he couldn't talk about the time-turner or the invisibility cloak, but there had to be something he could say about those red spheres.
Enough, Mr. Potter. Well, do you all think you understand what makes Mr. Potter the most dangerous student in the classroom?
There was a low murmur of assent.
Say it aloud, please. Terry Boot, what makes your dorm mate dangerous?
He's creative?
Wrong!
Bellowed Professor Quirrell, and his fist came down sharply on his desk with an amplified sound that made everyone jump.
All of Mr. Potter's ideas were worse than useless.
Harry started in surprise.
Remove the floor to create a spike trap? Ridiculous! In combat, you do not have that sort of preparation time, and if you did, there would be 100 better uses. Transfigure material from the walls. Mr. Potter cannot perform transfiguration. Mr. Potter had exactly one idea which he could use immediately, right now, without extensive preparation or a cooperative enemy, or magic he does not know. That idea was to jam his wand through his enemy's eye socket, which would be more likely to break his wand than kill his opponent. In short, Mr. Potter, I'm afraid that your proposals were uniformly awful.
What? Harry said indignantly. You asked for unusual ideas, not practical ones. I was thinking outside the box. How would you use something in this classroom to kill someone?
Professor Quirrell's expression was disapproving, but there were smile crinkles around his eyes.
Mr. Potter, I never said you were to kill. There is a time and a place for taking your enemy alive, and inside a Hogwarts classroom is usually one of those places. But, to answer your question, hit them on the neck with the edge of a chair.
There was some laughter from the Slytherins, but they were laughing with Harry, not at him. Everyone else was looking rather horrified.
But Mr. Potter has now demonstrated why he is the most dangerous student in the classroom. I asked for unaccustomed uses of items in this room for combat. Mr. Potter could have suggested using a desk to block a curse, or using a chair to trip an oncoming enemy, or wrapping cloth around his arm to create an improvised shield. Instead, every single use that Mr. Potter named was offensive, rather than defensive, and either fatal or potentially fatal.
What? Wait, that couldn't be true. Harry had a sudden sense of vertigo as he tried to remember what exactly he'd suggested. Surely there had to be a counterexample.
"And that," Professor Quirrell said, "is why Mr. Potter's ideas were so strange and useless, because he had to reach far into the impractical in order to meet his standard of killing the enemy. To him, any idea which fell short of that was not worth considering. This reflects a quality that we might call intent to kill. I have it. Harry Potter has it. Which is how he could stare down 5 older Slytherins. Draco Malfoy does not have it. Not yet. Mr. Malfoy would hardly shrink from talk of ordinary murder, but even he was shocked. Yes, you were, Mr. Malfoy. I was watching your face. When Mr. Potter described how to use his classmate's body as raw material. There are sensors inside your mind which make you flinch away from thoughts like that. Mr. Potter thinks purely of killing the enemy. He will grasp at any means to do so. He does not flinch. His senses are off. Even though his youthful genius is so undisciplined and impractical as to be useless, his intent to kill makes Harry Potter the most dangerous student in the classroom. One final point to him. No, let us make that a point to Ravenclaw for this indispensable requisite of a true fighting wizard.
Harry's mouth gaped open in speechless shock as he searched frantically for something to say to this.
That is so completely not what I'm about.
But he could see that the other students were starting to believe it. Harry's mind was flipping through possible denials and not finding anything that could stand up against the authoritative voice of Professor Quirrell. The best Harry had come up with was,
"I'm not a psychopath, I'm just very creative."
And that sounded kind of ominous. He needed to say something unexpected, something that would make people stop and reconsider.
"And now," Professor Quirrell said, "Mr. Potter, fire!"
Nothing happened, of course.
"Ah, well," said Professor Quirrell. He sighed. "I suppose we must all start somewhere. Mr. Potter, select any student you please for a simple strike hex. You will do so before I dismiss your class for the day. If you do not, I will begin deducting house points, and I will keep on deducting them until you do."
Harry carefully raised his wand. He had to do that much, or Professor Quirrell might start deducting house points right away. Slowly, as though on a roosting platter, Harry turned to face the Slytherins. And Harry's eyes met Draco's. Draco Malfoy didn't look the slightest bit afraid. The blonde-haired boy wasn't giving any visible sign of a sense, such as Harry had given Hermione, but then he could hardly be expected to do so. The other Slytherins would think that rather odd.
"Why the hesitation?" said Professor Quirrell. "Surely there's only one obvious choice."
"Yes," Harry said, "only one obvious choice."
Harry twisted the wand and said,
"Mahasu!"
There was complete silence in the classroom. Harry shook his left arm, trying to get rid of the lingering sting. There was more silence. Finally, Professor Quirrell sighed.
Yes, quite ingenious, but there was a lesson to be taught, and you dodged it. 1 point from Ravenclaw for showing off your own cleverness at the expense of the actual goal. Class dismissed.
And before anyone else could say anything, Harry sang out,
"Just kidding! Ravenclaw!"
There was silence for a brief moment after that, a sound of people thinking, and then the murmurs started, and rapidly rose to a roar of conversation. Harry turned towards Professor Quirrell. The two of them needed to talk. Quirrell had slumped over and was trudging back to his chair. No, not acceptable. They really needed to talk. Stuff the zombie act. Professor Quirrell would probably wake up if Harry poked him a couple of times. Harry started forward.
Wrong! Don't! Bad idea!
Harry swayed and stopped in his tracks, feeling dizzy, and then a flock of Ravenclaws descended on him, and the discussions began. Chapter 17. Locating the Hypothesis.
You start to see the pattern. Hear the rhythm of the world.
Thursday, if you wanted to be specific, 7:24 a.m. on Thursday morning. Harry was sitting on his bed, a textbook lying limp in his motionless hands. Harry had just had an idea for a truly brilliant experimental test. It would mean waiting an extra hour for breakfast, but that was why he had cereal bars. No, this idea absolutely, positively had to be tested right away, immediately, now. Harry set the textbook aside, leapt out of bed, raced around his bed, yanked out the cavern level of his trunk, ran down the stairs and started moving boxes of books around. He really needed to unpack and get bookcases at some point, but he was in the middle of his textbook reading contest with Hermione, and falling behind, so he hadn't had time. Harry found the book he wanted and raced back upstairs. The other boys were getting ready to go down to breakfast in the Great Hall and start the day.
"Excuse me, can you do something for me?"
said Harry. He was flipping through the book's index as he spoke, found the page with the first 10,000 primes, flipped to that page, and thrust the book at Anthony Goldstein.
"Pick 2 3-digit numbers from this list. Don't tell me what they are. Just multiply them together and tell me the product. Oh, and can you do the calculation twice to double-check? Please make really sure you've got the right answer. I'm not sure what's going to happen to me or the universe if you make a multiplication error."
It said a lot about what life in that dorm had been like over the past few days that Anthony didn't even bother saying anything like,
"Would you suddenly flip it?"
Or, "That seems really weird. What are your reasons for asking?" Or, "What do you mean you're not sure what's going to happen to the universe?" Anthony wordlessly accepted the book and took out a parchment and quill. Harry spun around and shut his eyes, making sure not to see anything, dancing back and forth and bouncing up and down with impatience. He got a pad of paper and a mechanical pencil and got ready to write.
"Okay," Anthony said. 181,429.
Harry wrote down 181,429. He repeated what he'd just written down and Anthony confirmed it. Then Harry raced back down into the cavern level of his trunk, glanced at his watch. The watch said 4:28, which meant 7:28, and then shut his eyes. Around 30 seconds later, Harry heard the sound of steps, followed by the sound of the cavern level of the trunk sliding shut. Harry wasn't worried about suffocating. An automatic air-freshening charm was part of what you got if you were willing to buy a really good trunk. Wasn't magic wonderful? It didn't have to worry about electric bills. And when Harry opened his eyes, he saw just what he'd been hoping to see. A folded piece of paper left on the floor. The gift of his future self. "Call that piece of paper
Paper 2.
Harry tore a piece of paper off his pad. "Call that
Paper 1.
It was, of course, the same piece of paper. You could even see, if you looked closely, that the ragged edges matched. Harry reviewed in his mind the algorithm that he would follow. If Harry opened up Paper 2 and it was blank, then he would write
101 times 101
down on Paper 1. Fold it up, study for an hour, go back in time, drop off Paper 1, which would thereby become Paper 2, and head on up out of the cavern level to join his dorm mates for breakfast. If Harry opened up Paper 2 and it had two numbers written on it, Harry would multiply those numbers together. If their product equaled 181,429, Harry would write down those two numbers on Paper 1 and send Paper 1 back in time. Otherwise, Harry would add 2 to the number on the right and write down the new pair of numbers on Paper 1. Unless that made the number on the right greater than 997, in which case Harry would add 2 to the number on the left and write down 101 on the right. And if Paper 2 said 997 times 997, Harry would leave Paper 1 blank. Which meant that the only possible stable time loop was the one in which Paper 2 contained the two prime factors of 181,429. If this worked, Harry could use it to recover any sort of answer that was easy to check but hard to find. He wouldn't have just shown that P equals NP once you had a time-turner. This trick was more general than that. Harry could use it to find the combinations on combination locks, or passwords of every sort. Maybe even find the entrance to Slytherin's Chamber of Secrets, if Harry could figure out some way of systematically describing all the locations in Hogwarts. It would be an awesome cheat, even by Harry's standards of cheating. Harry took Paper 2 in his trembling hand and unfolded it. Paper 2 said, in slightly shaky handwriting,
"Do not mess with time."
Harry wrote down,
"Do not mess with time,"
on Paper 1 in slightly shaky handwriting, folded it neatly, and resolved not to do any more truly brilliant experiments on time until he was at least 15 years old. To the best of Harry's knowledge, that had been the scariest experimental result in the entire history of science. It had been somewhat difficult for Harry to focus on reading his textbooks for the next hour. That was how Harry's Thursday started. Thursday, if you wanted to be specific, 3:32 p.m. on Thursday afternoon. Harry and all the other boys in the first year were outside on a grassy field with Madame Hooch, standing next to the Hogwarts supply of broomsticks. The girls would be learning to fly separately, Apparently, for some reason, girls didn't want to learn how to fly on broomsticks in the presence of boys. Harry had been a little wobbly all day long. He just couldn't seem to stop wondering how that particular stable time loop had been selected out of what was, in retrospect, a rather large space of possibilities. Also, seriously, broomsticks? He was going to fly on, basically, a line segment. Wasn't that pretty much the single most unstable shape you could possibly find, short of attempting to hold on to a point marble? Who'd selected that design for a flying device, out of all the possibilities? Harry had been hoping that it was just a figure of speech, but no, they were standing in front of what looked for all the world like ordinary wooden kitchen broomsticks. Had someone just gotten stuck on the idea of broomsticks and failed to consider anything else? It had to be. There was no way that the optimal designs for cleaning kitchens and flying would happen to coincide if you worked them out from scratch. It was a clear day, with a bright blue sky and a brilliant sun that was just begging to get in your eyes and make it impossible to see, if you were trying to fly around the sky. The ground was nice and dry, smelling positively baked, and somehow felt very, very hard under Harry's shoes. Harry kept reminding himself that the lowest common denominator of 11-year-olds was expected to learn this, and it couldn't be that hard.
"Stick out your right hand over the broom, or left hand if you're left-handed,"
called Madam Hooch,
"and say up."
"Up!"
everyone shouted. The broomstick leapt eagerly into Harry's hand, which put him at the head of the class for once. Apparently, saying up was a lot more difficult than it looked, and most of the broomsticks were rolling around on the ground or trying to inch away from their would-be riders. Of course, Harry would have bet money that Hermione had done at least as well when it came to her own turn to try earlier in the day. There couldn't possibly be anything he could master on the first try which would baffle Hermione. And if there was, and it turned out to be broomstick riding instead of anything intellectual, Harry would just die. It took a while for everyone to get a broomstick in front of them. Madam Hooch showed them how to mount and then walked around the field, correcting grips and stances. Apparently, even among the few children who'd been allowed to fly at home, they hadn't been taught to do it correctly. Madam Hooch surveyed the field of boys and nodded.
"Now, when I blow my whistle, you'll kick off the ground hard."
Harry swallowed hard, trying to quell the queasy feeling in his stomach.
"Keep your broom steady, rise a few feet, and then come straight back down by leaning forward slightly. On my whistle, 3, 2...
One of the brooms shot skyward, accompanied by a young boy's screams of horror, not delight. The boy was spinning at an awful rate as he ascended. They only got glimpses of his white face. As though in slow motion, Harry was leaping back off his own broom and scrambling for his wand, though he didn't really know what he planned to do with it. He'd had exactly 2 sessions of charms, and the last one had been the hover charm, but Harry had only been able to cast the spell successfully 1 time out of the 3, and he certainly couldn't levitate whole people.
"If there is any hidden power in me, let it reveal itself now!"
"Come back, boy!"
shouted Madam Hooch, which had to be the most unhelpful instruction imaginable for dealing with an out-of-control broomstick, from a flying instructor. And a fully automatic section of Harry's brain added Madam Hooch to his tally of fools. And the boy was thrown off the broomstick. He seemed to move very slowly through the air at first.
"Wingardium Leviosa!"
screamed Harry. The spell failed. He could feel it fail. There was a thud and a distant cracking sound, and the boy lay face down on the grass in a heap. Harry sheathed his wand and raced forward at full speed. He arrived at the boy's side at the same time as Madame Hooch, and Harry reached into his pouch and tried to recall... Oh, goodness, what was the name? Never mind, he'd just try... Healer's Pack! And it popped up into his hand and...
Broken wrist,
Madame Hooch said.
Calm down, boy, he just has a broken wrist.
There was a sort of mental lurch as Harry's mind snapped out of panic mode. The emergency healing pack plus lay open in front of him, and there was a syringe of liquid fire in Harry's hand, which would have kept the boy's brain oxygenated if he had managed to snap his neck.
Ah!
Harry said in a rather wavering sort of voice. His heart was pounding so loudly that he almost couldn't hear himself panting for breath.
Broken bone! Right! Setting string? That's for emergencies only,
snapped Madame Hooch.
Put it away, he's fine.
She leaned over the boy, offering him a hand.
Come on, boy, it's all right, up you get. You're not seriously going to make him ride the broomstick again,
Harry said in horror. Madame Hooch sent Harry a glare.
Of course not.
She pulled the boy to his feet, using his good arm. Harry saw with a shock that it was Neville Longbottom. Again. What was with him? And she turned to all the watching children.
None of you is to move while I take this boy to the hospital wing. You leave those brooms where they are, or you'll be out of Hogwarts before you can say Quidditch. Come on, dear.
And Madame Hooch walked off with Neville, who was clutching his wrist and trying to control his sniffles. When they were out of earshot, one of the Slytherins started giggling. That set off the others. Harry turned and looked at them. It seemed like a good time to memorize some faces. And Harry saw that Draco was strolling towards him, accompanied by Mr. Crabbe and Mr. Goyle. Mr. Crabbe wasn't smiling. Mr. Goyle decidedly was. Draco himself was wearing a very controlled face that twitched occasionally, from which Harry inferred that Draco thought it was hilarious, but saw no political advantage to being gained by laughing about it now instead of in the Slytherin dungeons afterwards.
"Well, Potter,"
Draco said in a low voice that didn't carry, still with that very controlled face that was twitching occasionally.
"Just wanted to say, when you take advantage of emergencies to demonstrate leadership, you want to look like you're in total control of the situation, rather than, say, going into a complete panic."
Mr. Goyle giggled, and Draco shot him a quelling look.
"But you probably scored a few points anyway. You need any help stowing that healer's kit?"
Harry turned to look at the healing pack, which got his own face turned away from Draco.
"I think I'm fine," Harry said.
He put the syringe back in its place, redid the latches, and stood up. Ernie Macmillan arrived just as Harry was feeding the pack into his moke-skin pouch.
"Thank you, Harry Potter, on behalf of Hufflepuff,"
Ernie Macmillan said formally.
"It was a good try, and a good thought."
"A good thought indeed," drawled Draco. "Why didn't anyone in Hufflepuff have their wands out? Maybe if you'd all helped instead of just Potter, you could have caught him. I thought Hufflepuffs were supposed to stick together."
Ernie looked like he was torn between getting angry and wanting to die of shame.
"We didn't think of it in time."
"Ah," said Draco. "Didn't think of it. I guess that's why it's better to have one Ravenclaw as a friend than all of Hufflepuff."
"Oh, hell. How was Harry supposed to juggle this one?"
"You're not helping,"
Harry said in a mild tone, hoping Draco would interpret that as, "You're interfering with my plans, please shut up."
"Aye, who's this?"
said Mr. Goyle. He stooped to the grass and picked up something around the size of a large marble, a glass ball that seemed to be filled with a swirling white mist. Ernie blinked.
"Neville's Remembrall!"
"What's a Remembrall?"
asked Harry.
"It turns red if you've forgotten something,"
Ernie said.
"It doesn't tell you what you forgot, though. Give it here, please, and I'll hand it back to Neville later."
Ernie held out his hand. A sudden grin flashed across Mr. Goyle's face, and he spun around and raced away. Ernie stood still for a moment in surprise and then shouted,
"Oi!"
and ran after Mr. Goyle. And Mr. Goyle grabbed a broomstick, hopped on it with one smooth motion, and took to the air. Harry's jaw dropped. Hadn't Madam Hooch said that would get him expelled?
"That idiot!"
Draco hissed. He opened his mouth to shout.
"Hoi!"
shouted Ernie.
"That's Neville's! Give it back!"
The Slytherins started cheering and hooting. Draco's mouth snapped shut. Harry caught the sudden look of indecision on his face.
"Draco,"
Harry said in a low tone,
"if you don't order that idiot back on the ground, the teacher's going to get back and..."
"Come and get it, Hufflepuffle!"
shouted Mr. Goyle, and a great cheer went up from the Slytherins.
"I can't," whispered Draco. "Everyone in Slytherin would think I'm weak."
"And if Mr. Goyle gets expelled,"
hissed Harry,
"your father is going to think you're a moron."
Draco's face twisted in agony. At that moment...
"Oi, Slither Slime!"
shouted Ernie.
"Didn't anyone ever tell you that Hufflepuffs stick together? Wands out, Hufflepuff!"
And there were suddenly a whole lot of wands pointed in Mr. Goyle's direction. 3 seconds later...
"Wands out, Slytherin!"
said around 5 different Slytherins. And there were a whole lot of wands pointed in Hufflepuff's direction. 2 seconds later...
"Wands out, Gryffindor!"
"Do something, Potter," whispered Draco. "I can't be the one to stop this. It has to be you. I'll owe you a favour. Just think of something. Aren't you supposed to be brilliant?"
In around 5.5 seconds, realized Harry, someone was going to cast the Sumerian Simple Strike Hex, and by the time it was over, and the teachers were done expelling people, the only boys left in his year would be Ravenclaws.
"Wands out, Ravenclaw!"
shouted Michael Corner, who was apparently feeling left out of the disaster.
"Gregory Goyle!"
screamed Harry.
"I challenge you to a contest for the possession of Neville's Remembrall."
There was a sudden pause.
"Oh, really?"
said Draco in the loudest drawl Harry had ever heard.
"That sounds interesting. What sort of contest, Potter?"
Contest had been as far as Harry's inspiration had gotten. What sort of contest? He couldn't say chess, because Draco wouldn't be able to accept without it looking strange. He couldn't say arm wrestling, because Mr. Goyle would crush him.
"How about this?" Harry said loudly. "Gregory Goyle and I stand apart from each other, and no one else is allowed to come near either of us. We don't use our wands, and neither does anyone else. I don't move from where I'm standing, and neither does he. And if I can get my hands on Neville's Remembrall,
Then Gregory Goyle relinquishes all claim to that remember-all he's holding and gives it to me.
There was another pause as people's looks of relief transmuted to confusion.
"Ha, Potter," said Draco loudly. "I'd like to see you do that. Mr. Goyle accepts."
"It's on," said Harry.
"Potter, what?"
whispered Draco, which he somehow did without moving his lips. Harry didn't know how to answer without moving his. People were putting their wands away, and Mr. Goyle swooped gracefully to the ground, looking rather confused. Some Hufflepuffs started over towards Mr. Goyle, but Harry shot them a desperately pleading look, and they backed off. Harry walked toward Mr. Goyle and stopped when he was a few paces away, far enough apart that they couldn't reach each other. Slowly, deliberately, Harry sheathed his wand. Everyone else backed away. Harry swallowed. He knew in broad outline what he wanted to do, but it had to be done in such a way that no one understood what he'd done.
"All right," Harry said loudly. "And now..."
He took a deep breath and raised one hand, fingers ready to snap. There were gasps from anyone who'd heard about the pies, which was practically everyone.
"I call upon the insanity of Hogwarts. Happy, happy, boom, boom, swamp, swamp, swamp."
And Harry snapped his fingers. A lot of people flinched, and nothing happened. Harry let the silence stretch on for a while, developing until...
Someone said, "Is that it?"
Harry looked at the boy who'd spoken.
"Look in front of you. You see that patch of ground that looks barren, without any grass on it?"
Yeah,
said the boy. A Gryffindor. Dean something.
"Dig it up."
Now Harry was getting a lot of strange looks.
Why?
Said Dean something.
"Just do it,"
said Terry Boot in a weary voice.
"No point asking why. Trust me on this one."
Dean something kneeled down and began to scoop away dirt. After a minute or so, Dean stood up again.
"There's nothing there,"
Dean said. Harry had been planning to go back in time and bury a treasure map that would lead to another treasure map that would lead to Neville's Remember-All, which he would put there after getting it back from Mr. Goyle. Then Harry realized there was a much simpler way that didn't threaten the secret of time-turners quite as much.
"Thanks, Dean,"
Harry said loudly.
"Ernie, would you look around on the ground where Neville fell and see if you can find Neville's Remember-All?"
People looked even more confused.
"Just do it,"
said Terry Boot.
"He'll keep trying until something works. And the scary thing is that..."
"Merlin!"
gasped Ernie. He was holding up Neville's Remember-All.
"It's here, right where he fell."
"What?"
cried Mr. Goyle. He looked down and saw that he was still holding Neville's Remember-All. There was a rather long pause.
Said
Dean something.
"That's not possible, is it?"
"It's a plot hole," said Harry. "I made myself weird enough to distract the universe for a moment, and it forgot that Goyle had already picked up the Remember-All. No. Wait. I mean, that's totally not possible. Excuse me. Are we all standing around here waiting to go flying on broomsticks? Yes, we are. So, shut up. Anyway, once I get my hands on Neville's Rememberall, the contest is over, and Gregory Goyle has to relinquish all claim to the Rememberall he's holding and give it to me. Those were the terms, remember?
Harry stretched out a hand and beckoned Ernie.
Just roll it over here, since no one's supposed to get close to me. Okay.
Hold on,
shouted a Slytherin. Blaze Zabini. Harry wasn't likely to forget that name.
How do we know that's Neville's Rememberall? You could have just dropped another Rememberall there.
The Slytherin is strong with this one,
Harry said, smiling.
But you have my word that the one Ernie's holding is Neville's. No comment about the one Gregory Goyle's holding.
Zabini spun to Draco.
Oh, Malfoy, you're not just going to let him get away with that?
Shut up, you,
rumbled Mr. Crabbe, standing behind Draco.
Mr. Malfoy doesn't need you to tell him what to do.
Good minion.
My bet was with Draco of the noble and most ancient house of Malfoy,
Harry said.
Not with you, Zabini. I have done what Mr. Malfoy said he'd like to see me do, and for the judgment of the bet, I leave that up to Mr. Malfoy.
Harry inclined his head towards Draco and raised his eyebrows slightly. That ought to allow Draco to save enough face. There was a pause.
You promise that actually is Neville's Rememberall?
Draco said.
Yes, Harry said. That's the one that'll go back to Neville, and it was his originally. And the one Gregory Goyle's holding goes to me.
Draco nodded, looking decisive.
I won't question the word of the noble house of Potter, then, no matter how strange that all was. And the noble and most ancient house of Malfoy keeps its word as well. Mr. Goyle, give that to Mr. Potter.
Hey,
Zabini said.
He hasn't won yet. He hasn't got his hands on...
Catch, Harry,
said Ernie, and he tossed the Rememberall. Harry easily snapped the Rememberall out of the air. He'd always had good reflexes that way.
There!
Said Harry.
I win.
Harry trailed off. All conversation stopped. The Rememberall was glowing bright red in his hand, blazing like a miniature sun that cast shadows on the ground in broad daylight. Thursday, if you wanted to be specific, 5:09 p.m. on Thursday afternoon in Professor McGonagall's office, after flying classes, with an extra hour for Harry slipped in between. Professor McGonagall sitting on her stool, Harry in the hot seat in front of her desk.
Professor,
Harry said tightly.
Slytherin was pointing their wands at Hufflepuff. Gryffindor was pointing their wands at Slytherin. Some idiot called wands out in Ravenclaw, and I had maybe 5 seconds to keep the whole thing from blowing sky high. It was all I could think of.
Professor McGonagall's face was pinched and angry.
You are not... to use the time-turner in that fashion, Mr. Potter. Is the concept of secrecy not something that you understand?
They don't know how I did it. They just think I can do really weird things by snapping my fingers. I've done other weird stuff that can't be done with time-turners even, and I'll do more stuff like that, and this case won't even stand out. I had to do it, Professor.
You did not have to do it,
snapped Professor McGonagall.
all you needed to do was get this anonymous Slytherin back on the ground and the wands put away. You could have challenged him to a game of exploding snap, but no, you had to use the time turner in a flagrant and unnecessary manner.
It was all I could think of. I don't even know what exploding snap is. They wouldn't have accepted a game of chess, and if I'd picked arm wrestling, I would have lost.
Then you should have picked wrestling.
Harry blinked.
But then I'd have lost.
Harry stopped. Professor McGonagall was looking very angry.
I'm sorry, Professor McGonagall, Harry said in a small voice. I honestly didn't think of that. And you're right. I should have. It would have been brilliant if I had. But I just didn't think of that at all.
Harry's voice trailed off. It was suddenly apparent to him that he'd had a lot of other options. He could have asked Draco to suggest something. He could have asked the crowd. His use of the time-turner had been flagrant and unnecessary. There had been a giant space of possibilities. Why had he picked that one? Because he had seen a way to win. Win possession of an unimportant trinket that the teachers would have taken back from Mr. Goyle anyway. Intent to win. That was what had gotten him.
I'm sorry, Harry said again, for my pride and my stupidity.
Professor McGonagall wiped a hand across her forehead. Some of her anger seemed to dissipate, but her voice still came out very hard.
One